Reading may have had a slice of good luck early on against Luton, but the Royals earned themselves a fine crust and stuffed the Hatters to finally get a piece of the action after football's restart. Welcome to episode 228 of the Tarlesen podcast, where we are salivating over the Maytay feast that was Reading's 5-0 win on the weekend. That's probably the most effort I'm going to put into an introduction for all season, so enjoy that while it lasted. I'm Mark May, your host. Talking after, as I say, Reading got off to a winning start in the restart on the weekend. And to do some analysis and chat over that, I've got two of the Tarlesen's finest minds to discuss with me this afternoon. Simeon Pickup, Bucks Royal, the editor of the Tarlesen. How's it going, mate?
Absolutely delighted. Not very often you see a Reading win, let alone one so heavy as that. And yeah, great times to be a Reading fan, at least temporarily.
And Ollie Allen's on as well. How's it going, mate?
Very well. Yeah, I'm not sure whether I'm ashamed or proud that you used quite so many puns in that intro there, but I'm all here for it.
Yeah, I was actually trying. I know that I missed some out, which is going to disappoint me. I do like to have 100% completion ratio on my puns, but there we go. Good job, by the way, guys, on the pizza Photoshop that went up on the Twitter as well. I enjoyed that. And this is based on, just to double check this before we move on, this was based on the idea that Yaku Meïssa was actually having a slice of pizza in the stands at Luton after scoring 4 goals.
Yeah, so I think what will happen was that what Mark Byrne said was that when they come off, they need to get food inside them straight away to refuel. And it just so happened that it was pizza. But yeah, no, thank you for the Photoshop praise. I appreciate that.
Well, if it does the job, then pizza. Famously banned, I think, is Fabio Capello in the England camp, and everyone hated him for doing it. So, yeah, if it brings morale up in the squad, then I'm here for it as well. Just before we move on then, I thank you, as always, to our Patreon subscribers and just generally to our listeners for coming back in after such a turnaround of games at the moment. It's difficult to get in, a life and a podcast just before getting into the next game of the Tuesday night, Saturday, Tuesday. And this is kind of why, as you'll see, my position of ignorance for the recap is going to take place. And also, thanks, of course, to our sponsor, ZCZ Films, for sticking with us as well. So let's go into the recap then for Reading 5, Luton 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, Yaku Meïssa with 4 goals, George Puskás with the one. Cannot forget that. Pretty decent performance as well to get the one goal and a couple of assists for George Puskás. And guys, this is where I have to shamefully admit that doing stuff on the weekend meant for the first time since the restart, I didn't catch the game live. My position of ignorance is therefore going to ask you, from having watched the Brentford game, which we lost 3-0 on Tuesday, what on earth happened in this scenario for us to come out with a 5-0 win? And Ollie, was this a case of Luton bad or Reading good, or of course both?
I think it probably is the easy answer, but it probably was a bit of both. I think it was pretty clear as to why Luton sort of have spent most of this season in and around that bottom three. They've got the worst goals against column in the league, and it was quite clear that there's a reason for that. And there wasn't really at any point in the afternoon where I sort of felt worried about the attacking threat they possessed, even when they hit the bar very early on. But other than that, I can't really remember a time where sort of Raphael was troubled, really. I think he didn't make a save until the 86th minute. So it was that, but at the same time, you have to credit Reading for sort of taking advantage of that, because it probably would have been pretty easy for Reading sort of to settle for sort of one or two goals, because we don't have much to play for, and certainly when it's 3-0 at half time, you could probably forgive them for sort of coming out second half and not really going for 4 or 5. But they did that, and that was superb, and it was sort of great to watch a Reading performance where sort of you got excited every time they went forward, because we've sort of seen over the last couple of weeks since the restart where Reading come forward but then can't really make that final pass or sort of get the shot away, and it sort of peters out. But every time they came forward at the weekend, it was as if something was going to happen, and it was great to see that for a change.
It felt to me, Sim, like the finishes in particular, certainly that one for Meïssa to get his fourth goal, it felt like that lack of pressure honest finish, and they're so natural, and it almost had that kind of training ground quality to it. And do you think that's the sort of thing? Is Mate a player who, I suppose he is a bit of a form player, really? We've spoken about Puskas enough. He's been in fits and starts, but hasn't really, you know, got one period of his game where he scored loads and loads of, or one period of the season where he scored loads of goals. But Mate, we've seen before that he is a bit of a form player, and this is the sort of thing that now he can kick on and actually finish the season really well.
Yeah, absolutely. His goals tend to come in bursts, really. I think you go back to, say, the 18-19 season where he scored quite a few. I think it was under Clement towards the end of 2018, and then scored in a bit of another purple patch under Gomez a few months later. He tends to do that rather than scoring regularly. And the goals he tends to score, they are typically headers or penalties or tap-ins, basically. Very different to the kind of goals we saw against Luton. The only real kind of comparable goal, I would say, to those was his one at Sheffield Wednesday a couple of months ago, where he kind of cut in behind the defence, got on the end of a through ball and finished. And he did that very similarly against Luton as well. And it's the mark of someone who's got a lot of confidence, basically. You need to time your run well, you need to receive the ball well and then finish. And to do it once or twice in a game is one thing, but to do it four times is quite incredible, and a huge testament to the guy who's obviously had a tough time of it personally in the not too distant past. And for him to really kind of kick on and get to this stage where he puts in a performance like that is fantastic.
Yeah, and credit as well to Mark Bowen for sticking with both him and Puskas, because there are certainly players that, you know, we've been doubting on this podcast. I was kind of hoping for Mate to get into the middle, and Mark Bowen actually said that Mate came to him and asked to play down the middle, and he said, no, I think you're better coming off the right. And that certainly, I think, Mark Bowen was a bit chuffed with himself if you listen to his manager quotes after the game. And he did have a number of calls that he made, Mark Bowen. He made five changes, three of which were in defence, with Osho, McIntyre and Tyler Blackett coming in. That left us with a 4-2-3-1 sim, and it was kind of, the heat map suggests it's kind of lopsided, with Swift and Ajaria both in that left channel, Blackett bobbing forward, Pele and Winamoto were the two men sitting deeper. How did you kind of find that formation? Was it effectively the same formation? Because that suggests it was the same formation that we've been playing for the few weeks previously anyway.
I think the thing about kind of how you unpack these formations, it's not necessarily just one formation throughout the entire game. You do switch between them, say, whether you're in possession or out of possession. I think out of possession, it seemed to be more of a 4-1-4-1, which allowed Swift and Rinomoto to kind of press a little bit more higher up. And when we won the ball back, they'd already be higher up. But when we were in possession, it seemed, I guess, more like a 4-2-3-1. Allowed Ajari and Mate to both cut in well. And when they cut in, there's a space out wide for Osho and Blackett to overlap, and both of them did that very well. The fullbacks, I thought, both of them coming in, they had to give a positive impression, and they did do that. Both were involved in goals going forwards, and it shows that the formation was that bit more fluid, that it did allow different creative players to slot in there nicely and complement each other. Basically, we've talked previously about, whether on social media or on here, about Elise, Ajaria and Swift all trying to fit into the same midfield. When you take out Elise, I wonder if it just made it a little bit more balanced for Ajaria on the left wing coming in, and Swift as well in the middle, without that extra creative player to kind of compensate for and to fit into the side. And in the end, it worked really well. It was a little bit reminiscent, I think, also of the team at the end of 2019 with Blackett overlapping on the left, Pele holding in the midfield, and Bowen did well to go back to it.
Yeah, Blackett's an interesting one, because he has had, as you say, a good period in the team previously, and I can't remember if he came out for suspension or injury, but I don't think it was really a tactical decision at the time. And Ollie Reading have a bit of an interesting scenario now, because, you know, as you said earlier, Luton hit the post and then had the chance right at the end, but otherwise the defence was pretty sound. Osho and McIntyre both in the Championship team of the week, as obviously was Mate, and Mark Bowen was the manager of that as well. So with those guys in the team, it suggests that, you know, we've got a bit of a problem, because The one man who wasn't in the team, Ollie, was Liam Moore. We've won all of the three games this season that he's not started in the league. And he, when he got dropped last time, he kind of really only came back out of convenience, I seem to remember as well. So he's got a real fight on his hands. And it's interesting when the captain goes that you just kind of look around and be like, don't really need him back in.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming sort of less of a coincidence each time it happens now. It probably is worth pointing out, obviously, you know, two of the games he's been dropped for have been Barnsley at home and Luton away, which, you know, as we've seen by the scorelines, you know, aren't exactly the hardest of challenges. You know, been interesting to see whether Moore had missed a game against Brentford, for example, and whether that would have made a difference there. But you have to say that Tom McIntyre came in and did a fantastic job at centre-back. You know, hadn't played, I don't think, since January, but that wasn't clear at all. I think he made the most clearances in the team and the most interceptions in the team and really put in a fantastic performance. So, yeah, it's becoming less of a coincidence. You know, look, I'm a fan of Liam more than man. I think he's a very, very good bloke. He comes across very well, very good natured. He's a fantastic ambassador for the football club and seems a pretty good captain. But you have to say sort of his performances the last couple of years have sort of dropped off. And, you know, with the result the weekend as it was, you can't really make an argument for him coming back into the side on Tuesday.
No, I think that's the thing, isn't it? And we've talked about young players and the need to give them time, and there's absolutely no reason why you dropped on McIntyre or even Gabe Osho down the right-hand side as well. So we just have to keep on as it is. And certainly Liam Moore, I think you're right, is a good bloke that he comes across as. I don't think he'd have any complaints and wouldn't be knocking on the manager's door after that sort of result. Final thing then, Sim, before I suppose we have to touch on it really, is I just wanted to point out a couple stats from the Luton games that 38% of the ball, we only had, you know, pretty low amount of possession, particularly against a team struggling at the bottom, but only 20% of the game was played in our final third. And it just, that sounds to me like the benefit of keeping the ball away from your goal is quite substantial in terms of good defending and good attacking. And I suppose that's one of the things that we couldn't do a few days earlier against Brentford, which was a game which felt we were constantly under pressure, couldn't get any foot on the ball. And I suppose really it's day and night in terms of the quality of Brentford and Luton, but it just shows that that this result coming off the back of the Brentford result is, I guess you could call it, strange.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's bizarre, really. I think what it essentially is the perfect storm of a really bad game in midweek and then the perfect storm of a really good game on Saturday. Everything going against you one day and then everything going in favour of you the next day. Just looking at the possession stats on that and the territory stats, it kind of reminds me a bit of Reading under Yapstam a couple of years ago, particularly the 17-18 season, when a team is very much encouraged to have the ball. I know Luton are a team that likes to have possession, likes to play with a little bit more style, as they've done under Nathan Jones in recent years. But when you combine that with a lack of confidence and a lack of incision, as Reading have themselves been victim of in recent years, it does come out with stats like that. And at the end of the day, they're not really achieving anything with 68% of possession. They're just kind of, if anything, making it easier for Reading to then counter on them, cut them open and score some really good goals. Because you look at some of the goals we were scoring against Luton, they're examples of us getting the ball through the thirds quickly, opening Luton up and having pretty simple finishes at the end of it.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's making it as simple as possible for the strikers, which we hadn't really. Even that Derby game, we think about Puskas having a chance and Ajari. They were nothing like the chances we were creating against Luton. And hopefully we have to find a way of translating that to against the bigger teams. I suppose in a way, luckily, that's not what we're playing for the next few weeks. So we'll talk about the games coming up in a bit. Let's now move on to the mailbag and hear from what Mark Bowen had to say as he spoke to the media after that Luton game.
So we played a very good side against Brentford and you know, that was part of the reason, if you like, for the result, but also we didn't approach in the right way. I just, you know, banging the drum to the players, from the staff and the players themselves, whoever played, that we had to be on the front foot. We had to put the ball in the right areas. We had to, everything we did with or without the ball, we had to be basically being proactive instead of reactive. and that's what I got. You know, from the lads, you got five goals and Yaku's got four, but that only comes and those chances come by putting the ball in the right areas and being positive in everything you do. And you know, I made five changes and the lads who came in, they've obviously been working hard individually even before we came back in and waiting for the opportunity. And I gave it to them today and they came out and put a great performance in.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So first up in the mailbag this week then, Ben Thomas asks, and I always like when we get to the mailbag and there's not something we've covered in the recap. It works quite well, I think. And Ben Thomas says, what the one player that we didn't really discuss in that is Pele. And he says, big question is that if Pele goes back to Monaco, which we are told he probably will, do we currently have enough or anyone else good enough and consistent enough to play in that deep central midfield role in front of the defence? Andy Hall's also saying, would the Stoke-Brentford games have panned out differently were Pele fit and in the team? I think, well, yeah, those two, certainly the Stoke game, I think we probably would have seen it out a lot more comfortably. Brentford, I'm not so sure about. But Ollie, the Pele question, do we have anyone else as good in that role? For me, is just a pretty straightforward no, sadly.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think no is the simple answer. I think Rinomata looked okay there at the weekend, but he was alongside Pele. I think, you know, he's one of sort of a number of players we've sort of tried in that role this season that haven't really worked for sort of a number of different reasons. I mean, John Swift has played there a little bit, but I don't really trust him defensively at all. I think he needs to be higher up. You know, we've seen what a creative player he can be. I don't think he can play that holding role particularly well. As I said, Rinomata is more of a box-to-box player. I think we need to probably get the idea out of our heads that he is a natural CDM, so to speak. Yeah, I think he's much more of an attacking player, and we saw that at the weekend. Even when he was sitting next to Pele, you know, he got forward a lot more than Pele. So he's more of a box-to-box player, and then Charlie Adam is Charlie Adam essentially. But yeah, we need to get someone in the mould of Pele in the summer. Whether that is Pele himself, I don't know how possible that's going to be. You know, we've seen this season, you know, how it has been good to sort of get back loanees we had last season in Miasca and Ajaria, because the players are already familiar with the club. As I say, I don't know whether we can get Pele either on loan again or how much it's going to cost, but I would definitely be looking to get someone like him, if not himself.
Sim, too, I suppose double pointed question then. Firstly, as Andy asked, well, do you really think the Brentford, I think we probably agree the Stoke game would have been different. Do you see the Brentford game have been too different with Pele? And also, if we are to go into the summer and, you know, you can only sign one player, two players, the sort of thing we're going to be talking about, if Pele leaves, is that central defence and midfield role, is that the most important position that we would have to invest whatever we can in?
Just on the first one, I'm inclined to say the Stoke one would have gone a little bit differently, but I'm not completely sure. I mean, Pele's obviously got a lot of defensive qualities. He's good at reading the game and breaking up the play, but he is liable to moments of to defensive lapses as well, which we have had a few times this season. So it's not been a big problem, but we have leaked a few goals. So although I'm kind of I want to say it would have been a boost for the Stoke game, certainly. I'm not completely convinced we would definitely have got better. It's easy for a defensive midfield player to look impressive and assertive in a game like the one against Luton when he's not really got too much coming through him in the way of incisive play from the home side. For the future, we could really use someone like him as well. I guess, as Ollie says, Rinomota's a good box-to-box player. He's good at winning the ball back, but he doesn't have that kind of that ability to play as a holding player in the same way as Pele. And we've seen a few times this season, not just against Luton, but I guess against Leeds as well at Elland Road, there is a positive to having Pele deeper and Rinomota higher up. You do want to be able to play Rinomota higher up, and if you're going to do that, you do kind of really need a holding midfielder behind him to allow him to do that. And it's not going to be easy to replace Pele, certainly to get someone with his technical ability as well as ability to to break the play up. But if we can do that, it will give our midfield another dimension, essentially.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's that it's that underrated role of a midfielder. We all like our, you know, energy, and we like our playmakers, but someone to break the play up is probably quite a difficult find as well. But also, you know, you can make a case that it's not the most expensive position in the world, which could help us out. Jack Killick asks, do you think Bowen choosing Swift as the captain means that he will likely or he will be more likely to stay at Reading next season, or just a simple case that he was the best candidate out of those who are playing on the day? Ollie, I did actually read from Mark Bowen saying that he went to Michael Morrison and said, do you fancy being captain? Will it actually change anything of your game? And Morrison basically turned around and said, well, I'm going to be vocal anyway, so it doesn't make too much difference to me. So he kind of gave it to Swift on the basis that it would encourage him to maybe come out of his shell a bit more. And he was the most senior player in the midfield. And generally, I think it was a pretty... I think those sort of decisions are pretty sound, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not personally too fussed about sort of who wears the armband on the pitch, because, as you say, Michael Morrison is going to scream and shout and command whether he's wearing an armband or not. So that doesn't really make a huge amount of difference. I'd agree in the fact that hopefully it can try and bring, or it did certainly seem to sort of bring out that sort of side of John Swift where he can sort of take control of the game, where there's not too much pressure on him, but at the same time, you know, he's told, you know, you are the main man for us in that midfield. And I didn't think he was perhaps as effective as he has been in other games, but he sort of took a bit of a backseat role. I mean, he still made, I think, the most passes in the team, but it wasn't perhaps as pronounced as you'd expect someone who's got 10 assists this season to be in a 5-0 win. He wasn't sort of that man at the moment. Obviously, Mate got 4 goals, but Swift sort of sat back a little bit, and perhaps that's what we needed from him a little bit. I think certainly giving him the armband might have given him that a bit more prominence. Whether it makes him more likely to stay next season, I think that's probably unlikely. We'll have to see who he gives the armband to tomorrow night. If he keeps the same side, I'd imagine Swift might get it again if he makes no changes and Liam Moore doesn't come back in. But whether he stays next season because he's given the armband, I think that's pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to make too much difference to Swift's future because, as we say with Morrison, it's the case of being a natural leader. Swift doesn't strike me as someone who is a natural leader, or maybe he doesn't even see himself as wanting to become a natural leader. So those aspects, I don't think they're going to play too much of a difference when, you know, would you like to be the fourth choice captain at Reading or the second choice central midfielder at Premier League club? It's pretty straightforward as decisions go, to be honest. Speaking of which, SB has asked us on, does Moore keep his captaincy after that? Do we then sell him? I don't think his captaincy is under threat because he's still a pretty decent guy. Remember, we had Paul McShane as our captain for a year. We didn't play him. So the captaincy is pretty safe and under lock and key, I would say. Sim, in terms of selling him, it's difficult this summer because if he's not playing in a Reading team that's not brilliant, and he's on a decent wage because we put him on a 5-year deal after he almost left for the Premier League, does anyone come in for him, or does he just about have that kind of... does he just about have a decent reputation enough for someone to still think he's worth it?
I think he's probably just about good enough for someone else to take a punt on him, but again, maybe not. His stocks, I don't want to say it's fallen sharply, but it's dropped a little bit.
Since the
Brighton saga, basically, that did seem to distract him, and I think he got a new contract after that. And I don't want to say it kind of made him lazy or put him off in any way, but I do just wonder if when you've come off having almost moved to the Premier League with Brighton and have then got a bump, a new contract at Reading, you've thought, right, I'm set. I can't really improve on this, basically, and he doesn't have that same edge that he would have had before to either earn a new big contract or to earn a move to the Premier League. I'm myself in the camp of try to sell him if you can this summer, because as Tom McIntyre showed, we've got a ready-made replacement. We've got someone who's really hungry. He's really got that desire to get into the team and do as well as he can and to really bust a gut for the first team, basically. And he did very well at the weekend. And what's more, he's got that kind of that balance on the left side of defence. He's got the ability to play out. He's really comfortable on the ball in a way that Liam Moore is as well. So if you did take Liam Moore out of the squad completely, you've got someone who can just step into the side in the shape of Tom McIntyre, and it's a big financial saving in terms of getting his wage off and hopefully getting a few million as well. So if you do that, if that's an option, then Reading should take it.
I think they should take it, but it comes down to as well what Miazga is going to do as well. If you could, for a completely hypothetical scenario, sell Moore for £2 million and buy Miazga for £500,000, that's a deal I would take. But if it's the other way around, I'm not going to, you know, if I don't want to lose both of them, basically. I don't think that's a sensible thing to do.
I don't think you get Miazga for £500,000 either.
No, exactly. It's difficult when you... If you go and sell your player for £2 million and then you go and offer £1 million for another centre-back, they'll say, no, you've got £2 million quid in there. We want all of it. So, especially when you're dealing with a Premier League team who is probably quite happy just to put Matt Miazga in their reserves for a year or on loan if they really have to. So, yeah, it's going to be a difficult one. The summer's going to be a weird one. We obviously have started seeing it with Premier League teams who are able to start making moves here and there. Championship teams, it's going to be a whole different dimension, and I'm not sure there's going to be much money floating about for anyone to buy Liam Moore. Lee asks us on Twitter, what's happened to Felipe Araruna and Sonny Aluko? Anyone know? Anyone want to jump in on this? I'm not too sure that they're just not playing in the reserves, basically, or just training.
With Araruna, I kind of half sarcastically tweeted to Matt Joy, who's the Reading Chronicle journalist, who was asking for questions to put to Mark Bowen. I kind of jokingly asked him, is Felipe Araruna alive and well? Because we just had no sign of him, basically. He made a few very early appearances in his Reading career. It seemed like he'd been kind of thrown in at the deep end a little bit, and we've barely seen him since. I think he might be injured at the minute. I think Bowen said he's got maybe a groin injury or something like that, but... even so, if he were fit, he's the kind of player that you would want to be playing at the minute, because I presume he's got a few years on his contract. I'm not sure quite how long at the minute, but he needs the game time to get used to English football. And if you are losing Pelé in the summer, if you are losing John Swift in the summer, the midfielders you do have at the minute, you need to make sure they're ready for next season. And it might be we're not able to do that if he's injured for the rest of this season and into next season or whatever, but that should be something that's on Mark Bowen's mind.
Yeah, Ollie, with Aluko as well, just seems to be... Yeah, he has had a fair crack of the whip under Bowen, so he could argue, I suppose you could say not as well, but now we're back into this scenario. Yes, I guess there is a case that maybe he's injured or whatever, but just the sheer absence that he's had is just worrying from any sense that he's actually going to pull back through.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at this Reading team and think that it's missing a Sonny Aluko in there, if I'm honest. I've never been a massive fan of his, and I'd imagine the club will probably look to sell him this summer. I think his contract is up at the end of next season, so that they're going to want to get some of that enormous transfer fee back that they paid for him. certainly, I don't have any desire to see him in the first team. I have to admit, he played pretty well when he came on against Cardiff in the Cup, and obviously scored the winning penalty in that game. But other than that, I can probably count on one hand how many good games he's had for Reading. So in the nicest possible way, I'm not too bothered about where he is, if I'm honest.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? This comes to like Lucas Boye as well as another player who I'm not sure is fit. I'm not sure. We have a bloated squad, and it doesn't help when we're paying, you know, we don't need all these players. We have got a massive wage bill that we don't need to be paying. We've got quite a few young players that are coming through. So, yeah, hopefully that's just, once again, I swear, the last three seasons we've got into the summer saying, oh, if we can trim down the squad, well, we just keep not. So, hopefully this is the time to actually finally work something out that way. And I think Mark Bowen will probably be keen on it. Final question then, Dr. Graham Negative asking, if you were to pick one existing young player to build the team around next season, who would it be? He would personally say Ajaria. Sim, you kind of made a pretty decent case earlier for McIntyre. I'd say Elise. You wouldn't want to build a team around Elise because you don't know exactly where he's going to play. Is he really going to be a centre mid? You wouldn't want to build a team around like a left winger. So I suppose would you potentially say McIntyre then?
Yeah, I'd go with McIntyre as well. And we talk a lot about how he's very much a Reading man through and through. He's got that passion. He's got that knowledge of the club. And you could quite easily see him being a Reading first team player for 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. And it makes sense to build a team around him, I guess. Ejaro is a good case as well. My only kind of slight reservation about that, obviously a very talented player, but he's not quite as consistent as he used to be, because we do have that problem of, do you play him through the middle? Do you play him on the left? Do you play him kind of coming in off the left into a central position? He's not quite as easy to kind of fit in on a regular basis. I'm not saying don't play him each week, but it's just a little bit more tricky. It's a little bit more nuanced, basically, with Ejaro.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Consistency if you're going to build a team around a player, which is difficult to get out of your luxury players who provide your moments of magic, whereas your sort of centre-backs, centre-mids who are a bit more stable, perhaps a bit more steady, you can build a team around from then. So we'll see how that goes. I don't think we're going to be drastically altering the very nature of the team in the summer, so probably not too much different for next season, in my opinion, but that will remain to be seen. And we'll jump now into news bites. We talked about players potentially staying and going. Well, there have been a hell of a lot of players leaving this week, you might not have noticed. So we'll talk about those next in News Bites.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Okay then, I'm going to tell you the players that still play for the under-23s, and then I'm going to tell you the players that no longer play for the under-23s, and we'll compare which is the bigger list. So the players that I can guarantee you, I think, still play for the under-23s, we've got Konya Boyce-Clark, really highly rated the young England goalkeeper, James Holden, Augustus McGiff, who's an American attacker we signed last season, Femi Aziz and Jordan Holsgrove, who's been on loan in Spain at the lower leagues this season. Those who have left, clear my throat, Liam Driscoll, Lexis Beeden, Andre Burley, Marcel Elverfontein, Romani Medford-Smith, Akinwe Odomeo, Werrick Caetano, Ethan Coleman, Tyler Frost, Roberto Nditi, Ben House, Adam Liddell, Emmanuel Obama-Kinwa, Pedro Neves, Vito Minoni and Adrian Popper, who those last two you've heard of, they're not in the academy. Guys, that is a huge amount of players to have released from the under-23s. You can expect six or seven, half of those probably, to have left anyway. But this is, Ollie, this is a clear sign of the COVID-19 impact just shredding our academy. And basically, I mean, it's awful to say that we've kind of backed the ones who we probably think are 90% more likely to concede, or to succeed rather. A lot of those players I'm named to have leaving sadly won't make it. But that is a stunning amount of players to be letting go.
You do have to wonder how much the pandemic has played a part. Obviously, there were reports, the club never officially confirmed it themselves, but there were reports that the 23 side had been placed on furlough over the course of the pandemic, and whether that's played a role here. I think a lot of those players were probably out of contract anyway. But the fact that, hardly any of them have been renewed, especially the ones that have made their debuts for the first team this season, likes of Burley, Medford-Smith, Ben House got subbed on and subbed off again in 9 minutes. But, there's definitely some talent in there. I mean, I can't say I saw much of them apart from those first team appearances, but I can't think that based on talent alone that they're letting go just those 14 players. So I think you have to say that the pandemic's playing a part. I've not looked at that many other retain lists, but it might be quite similar. I know Cardiff, for example, have released 10 players from their academy. So I don't think it's necessarily uncommon, and whether it's, Reading aren't sort of, standing by these young players or anything, but yeah, it seems a hell of a clear out. And certainly you're probably looking at now the 23 side next season sort of being made up, quite heavily of under-18s potentially.
Yeah, it seems to me that a lot of Championship clubs are going to be doing this. Obviously, we've seen Wigan go into administration. A lot of clubs have got rid of their academies. And Sim, this isn't this isn't a kind of Brentford style restructuring. Brentford don't really have an academy, do they? They have a B team of players they kind of picked up in Scandinavia, which I'm sure is more expensive than the way that we do it. But to have those players depart, it just shows that we don't have the necessary funds to do the fluffy extras around the club at the moment, do we? We have, you know, genuine first team prospects. We've kept on six players who are contract. We've kept on the loanee players. We're obviously paying for a decent amount of money for those. But anything that is not involved in the first team winning points next season, or potentially in the next two seasons, three seasons, we just can't afford at the moment.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say, on the other hand of this, that we do have a very good under 18 crop. We do have some very talented players down there who have already played partially for the under 23s that could then step up and take the place of these people. People like Kenai Boyce Clark, Connor Lawless, Pendlebury as well, Thierry Nevers, players who you want to see playing regularly for the under 23s and will now have a clearer run at it than players who, obviously, there's some who made their debut this season, others who kind of have got onto the bench without playing. I wonder if this is basically the group that essentially got squeezed between a good crop coming up in the under-18s and essentially the edges of the first-team squad. And the club have basically said, we don't have the money to keep you on for another year, and maybe you will play, maybe you won't. Maybe we'll have to farm you out on loan, maybe we won't. And they've just not taken the risk, basically. They've not taken that investment. And, of course, this is quite a small investment. Players like this are not on huge wages in relation to other people we've released, like Manone and Popper. The finance is very different, and it does show that the club is cutting its cloth, is having to be quite brutal. And I wonder how much this kind of previews what we're going to be doing with the first team squad in the summer. Are we going to see this kind of, for want of a better word, culling? I don't want to say we're going to go on some kind of fire sale. It doesn't really seem like we're in that kind of position, but when you are cutting so many under 23 players, it does beg the question, what's going to happen higher up?
Yeah, and we've seen, as I mentioned, Vito Minoni and AD Popper going as well. That was always going to happen. Popper, it's bizarre that he was even still out of contract. So it's fire sale, as you say. It's just the wrong year. Have a fire sale in a year when people have money. Don't have it in a year when no one's got money. So we will see with that, really. But yeah, I think it's eight first-team players from the women's team have been released as well. So quite a substantial cut of players. So as you know, I suppose we as well, as Tyler said, these guys are not millionaires. These guys are a lot of local lads in there, a lot of fans of the team and everything, a lot of players who we're potentially seeing next season as their year. So best of luck to them as well. And I would say, from a general footballing point of view, there's as a lot of these players are going to be released from Championship and maybe lesser Premier League teams. A lot of them are going to be fighting over places in League Two, you know, National League. A lot of players who, you know, have, I think, rely on contracts in there, but maybe in their 30s for mortgages and stuff like that, have been released and are fighting for clubs. It's going to be a really, really difficult time for a lot of those players. And I suppose as well, from a journalistic point of view, from a fan's point of view, a really interesting time to see how the tiers outside of the Premier League deal with that. So that's a conversation. Hopefully we'll have another day and see what Reading can come up with in terms of keeping themselves afloat. But for now, there are always pressing matters right around the corner on the football pitch, and we'll be talking about that now in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
It's another early evening kickoff on Tuesday, July the 7th, Reading against Huddersfield. And then on the Saturday, it's a 12:30 kickoff, Reading against Charlton. So guys, we play a team who are just 2 points clear of the relegation zone. They're 4 points in their last two games without conceding a goal. However, they only had two shots against Preston while drawing 0-0 with them at home on the weekend. And Ollie, this is a Huddersfield team who, that kind of little upturn in form does worry me a little bit, but everything else other than that does not particularly strike me as a as a fantastic team that we'll be welcoming on the Mad Stad.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very strange that they were a Premier League side last season. It seems ages ago that was a thing. Obviously, they'd not had the most pleasant return to the Championship. I think a 0-0 draw against Preston is certainly not a bad result. I think Preston haven't been on the best of form since the restart, but, you know, still a side that are hoping to get into the playoffs this season. So that's not a bad result at all. And certainly that 3-0 win over Birmingham will do them no harm at all. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough game because Huddersfield need the points. Obviously, Luton did it the weekend as well. I think on paper, we are a better side than them, as the league table suggests. They've still got some good players in there, certainly. I think Carlin Grant, their striker, is one of the top scorers in the league this season. So he's definitely one to look out for. But, you know, I think based off the weekend, if you can take that confidence into the game, and certainly, you know, you would hope after a 5-0 win that, you know, those Reading players want out and want to go out and sort of do much the same again. I'm not saying we're going to win 5-0 again, but you would hope they can follow up such a convincing win with 3 more points.
So, we spoke about how Reading benefited from Luton, you know, kind of just sitting on the ball, maybe coming onto us a little bit and having space that we can kind of launch attacks from. Huddersfield are not going to be that sort of team, even against a team like Preston. They really sat back and kind of held out for that point on the weekend. They're probably going to come to us and do the same sort of thing. So is there a danger that we're going to fall into old ways of, you know, playing all right for the first 15 minutes, getting a goal and then sitting back and then not really knowing what to do with ourselves and conceding an equaliser?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be a very tricky, very different game to the Luton match. And I wonder if, just even looking at the basic stats we've looked at already, it's going to make it even more difficult on Tuesday, because Huddersfield will certainly have looked at the amount of the ball that Luton had and how ineffective they were, how effective we were at essentially cutting through Luton without having to have too much of the ball. And this is the thing. This is going to probably prompt Huddersfield to come to the Medeski, set up not a massively deep block, not kind of sitting like camping in front of their penalty area or anything like that, but they're going to be conservative. They're going to be cautious. They're going to try and break on us rather than letting us break on them, as they know we can be so dangerous at that. And we're going to have to show a different kind of our game, essentially. We're going to have to unpick their defence in a way that we've kind of struggled to do this season. You look at the best play we've had, the best form we've had, it's typically been about countering on teams and on finding the space that way. And it's going to take a very different kind of performance from John Swift as well. Ollie mentioned earlier about how he's taken a back seat in the Luton game. We're going to need him to be as important as, to be as influential as he can be against Huddersfield, because he does have that ability to unpick a defence. It's going to be a much more difficult one, on the other hand, for Yaku Mate, who had space on the counter against Luton. But again, it's a very different proposition to do the same against Huddersfield coming to the Medeski.
I'm curious as to whether Mark Bowen's actually going to play the same sort of team or formation, because it would be, you know, Huddersfield, it's, as we said, it's pretty blatant. If you turn up against Reading and you sit men back and hold out and then launch to last 10 minutes, we don't tend to do very well against that. So you do it, basically, if you're Huddersfield. If you're Mark Bowen, do you just think, you know what, let's do a 4-4-2, let's just do a really basics, make it a bit of a different kind of game? I'm curious as to whether he's going to do that sort of thing. Because generally speaking, I mean, we'll talk about prediction lead to round off the show now. And generally speaking, I can really see this game going exactly as we've had quite a few games this season. I think we'll start well, get a goal, second half, maybe if we can get that second goal in the first half, then we'll be absolutely fine. But if second half, 1-0 up, Huddersfield start coming on to us, we haven't been very good at scoring on the counter-attack at home this season. That's why we've not got, you know, we've not killed off games certainly as much as we should have. So, you know, maybe this is the time with a bit of confidence we've got at the moment that it does sort itself out. And in terms of prediction league, I'll throw out a 2-0 Reading win for my prediction. How we've been getting on the last week, we've done all right, to be fair. On Brentford, myself, Ollie, Johnny and Wim all said we're going to lose. against Luton. Ollie, you had a win again. Sim and Handbags also with victories. So the current standings, myself on 35, Sim 24, Wim and Ollie on 21, Johnny 20, Handbags and Westy on 15. So let's throw that over to the current second place incumbent then. Sim, what's your prediction for this game?
I'm going to predict Reading to kind of edge it 2-0, which seems like maybe a bit more comfortable game, but I think we're gonna get the edge, and Huddersfield are going to come back into it and make things difficult for us, but we are just going to have that enough to make it a 2-0 win.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that as well. Ollie, what are you thinking?
I think we saw against Luton at the weekend that sort of how key that second goal can be. Certainly, you know, when it came in such quick succession against Luton, I think we scored in the 17th minute and then the 18th minute. It didn't really kill the game off, but it certainly took Luton by surprise and made it very difficult for them to get back into that game. So I'd agree with you in a sense that I'd be worried if we sort of sat on a 1-0 lead for quite a long time. I do think we will get the win, perhaps not get a clean sheet. So I'm going to go 2-1 to Reading.
2-1 to Reading then from Ollie. So I will get everyone else's results as we sort of tick into this prediction league, going a bit of a second place race, unless I can somehow manage to fumble the lead at this stage then. And Reading certainly with a decent position then, that they don't want to fumble going into the last five games of the season. Just to leave you then with the current standings, Reading in 14th position, 52 points. You know, if you add 5 points to that, you get to 11th. If you take away 5 points, you're only down to 17th. So pretty comfortable position Reading win at the moment. We will be back next week, potentially a weekend show, a bit more hasty after the weekend games. And thank you very much for listening to this week's show. Thank you very much, Sim and Ollie, for popping on.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And Reading will try and make it 2 from 2 on Tuesday night at the Mad Stad, 6 p.m. kickoff for all those iFollowers. I'm absolutely sure there are a few of you out there who were 7:45 last week, started buying a match pass and then thought, hang on a second, and then realised you'd probably saved yourself a good tenner. So, yeah, 6 o'clock at the Mad Stad for the Huddersfield game. Reading, after that 5-0 win, with a whole heap of confidence, and let's keep this show on the road and push towards a top half finish for the Royals. Until next time, thank you for listening, and come on, you arts. Just starting to see, kissing out the